Thanksgiving, the natives gave to me 5 pairs of moccasins, 4 bows and arrows,
3 native headdresses,
2 turkey gobblers,
and a pumpkin in a pumpkin patch.
You're listening to a scene from the satirical comedy Thanksgiving Play, written by Native American playwright Larissa Fasthorse. It's about 4 white people struggling to devise a politically correct school production of the first Thanksgiving for Native American Heritage Month. In this production, which is now playing at the Geffen Theater in Los Angeles, Fasthorse takes head-on through humor the mythology that we've all learned, pilgrims and Indians finding peace over a meal. To talk more about her work, we're joined in studio by playwright Larissa Fasthorse. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks.
Okay, so this play ran last fall in New York. It's here in LA, as I said. It's traveling to other parts of the country, and it's been ranked in the American Theater Magazine's annual ranking as the 10 most produced plays in the 2019-2020 season. And yet, you say that in many ways, this is your most depressing success. Why?
Yeah, it is. You know, fortunately, I will say from the top, I love the play.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy with it. And I'm thrilled that so many people are seeing it. And I think it's doing all the things I want it to do. But yeah, I'm Native American. I'm Lakota. And all of my previous plays, almost all of them, had at least one Indigenous actor in it, a character that had to be played, in my opinion, by an Indigenous person. And I was told my plays were uncastable over and over again, even with one half Native American character.
Really?
Yeah, that it just wasn't possible.
And what's the reason that was given?
You know, the reason is that isn't true. The reason is really that people just haven't tried. You know, if you haven't produced anything with Native American actors in the entire history of your theater, which is pretty much every theater I've ever worked in, then you don't know where to go to find the Native actors, and they perhaps have not self-identified to you because they're only able to make a living playing something that they maybe have, you know, parts of other things, like maybe they're part Hispanic, and so they're playing those roles, but they've never admitted they're Indigenous because there hasn't been a role for them. And so, you know, so it kind of goes back and forth. It's the chicken or the egg, you know? You can't find the actors, but you've never had a role for the actor.
That's
and round. So I created this play. I said, fine, American theater, here's 4 white presenting people in one room talking about contemporary Indigenous issues. And if you can't produce that, we have a different discussion we need to have.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the characters for a moment. Again, the play takes place at an elementary school. An adult cast is producing a play for students. And the director of the play, Logan, hires what she believes is a Native American actor to be their cultural compass throughout the play. And the cast defers to this actor for her guidance, which then is revealed that she's actually white and only plays Native American people when she isn't playing other ethnicities. We have a clip from the play that speaks to this issue. Let's take a listen.
My voice is the most important. You said so. Because I thought you were Native American. So non-Native American voices aren't important?
Did you wonder why we were asking your advice on all this stuff?
Because it's devised. But we need a Native American person to do this play. I got a grant. Look, you hired me off my Native American headshot, so that's on you.
I think I actually laughed out loud when I saw the play and she said, I got a grant. You have to be Native American. But these characters, they're a certain kind of white person, liberal, perhaps what we call woke. Why was it important for you to tell the stories with these types of characters?
I live in Santa Monica, which I feel like is the epicenter of performative wokeness. But also in the theater field, you know, we are a pretty liberal-leaning group of folks. And lots of really well-meaning white people are in charge of American theater. And although they certainly have given me a career and been lovely to me in so many ways, I feel like that over striving to do the right thing and not screw up and not make a mistake creates this weird paralysis where real change doesn't actually happen, because real change is messy and difficult and has all kinds of mistakes and all kinds of problems and hurts feelings. And then we find our way through it. Performative change, you know, like we want to look like we're changing without really doing anything, is a lot easier. And I think we do a lot of that in American theater and in the liberal left in general today.
Yeah, that message really resonates in this play. As I said, I saw it, and I was one of the few people of color in the audience.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine who you were writing this for.
Yeah, I'm definitely writing for white people, or writing to white people, right? But I do, I will say, you know, it's a satire for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think you responded to that from what I can tell already. But it's also comedy. And to me, the comedy was sort of a gift, right? To like, I get you, liberal white folks that tend to come to theater, and I welcome everybody else too, to come and laugh and have a good time. And I want people to have that communal experience of laughter together. You don't get that anywhere else except in theater, really, in live performance. And I wanted that to happen. But at the same time, you know, there's jokes in that show that are specifically for my people of color, you know, and some are specifically just for the indigenous folks and some are specifically for people of color. And I can always tell where the people of color are because unfortunately,
you hear the light,
yeah, there's only a few of y'all. Right. Yeah. But I can hear them because I'm like, oh, there's your joke. You got it. I know where you all are.
Yeah. Yeah. What's been the response to the play? I'm just interested to know after watching this play what people come up to you and say.
Yeah, you know, it's all over the map. I've always said, you know, if everybody loved my work, I'd be really bummed out because I wouldn't feel like I'm doing my job, right? Because my job is to change both the face of American theater, but also to change audiences. I'm there to get in your head and make you think differently. And I would say the second half of my play happens after you leave, after the lights come up. Mm. That's when the whole second half of the play happens, when you have to think about it and question things and wonder, and why do I accept this as truth? Why have I never questioned this?
Yeah. You've been at this for quite a while. I want to talk a little bit about your career. You describe yourself as a translator. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I'm half Lakota and half white. And then I had a hunka, or an adopted family, that is white. I felt all those things, those haves and those outside things as outside. And then they felt like detriments and things that were in my way or holding me back. But now, you know, with the advantage of age, I get to look back and realize that those have given me my superpower. My superpower is to translate indigenous culture and experience to a white audience. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to translate some experiences that they may not have had before and help them see them in a different lens and maybe from the inside in a way that they've never done before, and hopefully create some empathy and some interest in learning.
I read that you grew up during a period when the government attempted to reconcile with indigenous communities. So something really fascinating is that you didn't really learn this problematic narrative that we all know about the pilgrims and the Indians.
Yeah, no, not at all. It's so crazy. I didn't know any of this until I started doing research for the play, because where I grew up in South Dakota, which is a really rural state, we had Thanksgiving was about family and gratitude and mostly harvest. It was kind of a harvest festival. And so there's lots of cornucopias and celebrating harvest. And that made sense. We didn't do any of that pilgrim and Indian stuff. I had no idea about that until I was an adult.
And then, when you learned about it, how did that change or shape your ideas around Thanksgiving?
Oh, my goodness. It's shocking. It's horrifying. And, you know, there's some of the things like that first song that we heard, the clip of at the beginning of this. It seems silly and fun. It's about, you know, first day of Thanksgiving, the natives gave to me, a pumpkin and a pumpkin patch, and then two turkey gobblers, et cetera, et cetera. It seems, you know, that's a song for preschoolers, and it seems innocuous and cute and fun. But think about it. You're telling little teeny toddlers that they should stand there as little white pilgrims and be given everything that the Indians have, up to their headdresses and their homes. Everything should be given to you, and that the Indians are happy about it, and they think it's great, and that in the end, you should have everything. So really what we're doing with a simple, fun little song is we're taking the toddlers of today and making them the appropriators of tomorrow.
Hmm.
The hardest thing that I totally empathize with is that for us to really, all of us of all colors and anythings, to acknowledge indigenous culture and history in this nation, we have to acknowledge complicity. And that if you're here, you're on stolen land. However you got here at this moment, I am on stolen land right now. This is not my lands. And that I have to acknowledge my complicity in profiting off of stolen property.
What do you want us to also be thinking about as we enter this Thanksgiving holiday?
You know, I think gratitude could be defined a lot more broadly, as to not just things we have, but I like gratitude. I love a day devoted to gratitude. But then when we have gratitude, we have to think about, like, how do we have those things? And I think it's okay to hold two very different ideas at once, that I'm grateful for my family or my home or my job or whatever that is. And then at the same time hold, well, how did we get this? And what can I do to repay some of the debt that we all owe by profiting off of someone else's stolen land. Mm. And what can I do as a human? Maybe all I can do is right now in my capacity is just to learn who those people are and learn how to name them and learn about them and then start going and saying, is there anything I can do to give back? Is there anything you need? Can I be of service in some way? And if, I mean, if our entire country started just with that, knowing whose land you're on, knowing who the original people are, and asking if there was some way to give back, it would change the entire course of the history of this country. We've never had an awareness like that since, you know, 500 years ago when Columbus first stumbled over here.
Playwright Larissa Fasthorse, creator of the satirical comedy Thanksgiving Play, now being performed at the Geffen Theater in Los Angeles. Thank you so much, Larissa.
Thank you.